Hello everyone and welcome to an airline pilot podcast from Flight Level 320. This is a podcast all about aviation and flight simulation hosted by myself, 320 Sim Pilot, a real world airline pilot, flight simmer and YouTuber. I'll be joined by other pilots and experienced flight simmers as we discuss all things aviation and flight sim, answer questions from the community and chat about what it's like to take some of these incredible machines into the sky. This is from Flight Level 320. In today's episode, we once again are joined by Barney, another experienced airline pilot, captain, an enthusiastic flight simmer and VATSIM controller with many years experience across all these fields. We'll start this time by answering some of the big questions you send us about real-world aviation, airline flying and flight simulation. We'll then take a look at some of the recent changes and news in the world of flight sim. As ever, a very big thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you so much. It really means the world to us. Thank you for your kind words and comments, and it's always great to hear any feedback. Questions can be asked on the 320 SimPilot Discord, and of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please do share it with people who may be interested. This is the only way really to help this podcast grow, and this way I can bring you a wider variety of interviews and content, so that would be really appreciated. All views expressed in the podcast are our own. They do not reflect those of our employers, and all content is for entertainment purposes only and not for any real-world use. Let's get started. So welcome back, week three now, of Barney. Thanks for joining us again.
That's all right. It's great to be here. Excellent. For the third time. I'm surprised I'm back.
Yeah, you're proving popular. We've had lots of great feedback as usual. Good. So the episode two, we had loads of really nice comments, and I've had some really lovely emails as well. So people are really enjoying your thoughts on aviation, which is nice to hear. So thank you all for those really kind emails and messages and comments and just for listening. Really appreciate it, and I'm sure Amazing. Barney does as well.
Yeah, no, it is lovely. Thank you.
So, as I said, we're going to actually swap around the order today. We'll start off with the questions. So these are, again, coming from the Discord. If you'd like to ask any questions, go to the 320 SimPilot Discord, and you can post them in the podcast questions section. I will open this up to YouTube as well later on, once I have a bit of a routine going. But the first question then today, Barney, is from Jemima. Yep. And it is. Okay. Do you have binoculars on the flight deck? And if so, how often do you use them?
We don't. We don't actually, no. We just have our Mark One eyeball, as people like to say.
So, yeah, all pilots, right from the start of ground school, refer to it as a Mark One eyeball. Although that's probably in lots of industries. But really.
It'd be good, it would be quite useful, I think, sometimes.
That's what I was going to say. Have you ever thought about taking them to work or flying with binoculars?
Do you know what? I haven't, but thinking back, I think I have flown with someone who has had a little mini pair in his bag, and I thought that's a great idea.
Yep, and that's the funny thing. I know someone who does take. I've flown with people with binoculars and also with even a telescope, which is brilliant. Proper sea captain sort of stuff. Yeah, yeah, like the real deal. I mean, imagine you're looking for an alternate, and instead of looking into the nav display or something. Or your charts, they just put out their telescope and start looking around.
Yeah. Well, I can see the windsock. I can see. That'd be a great way of doing it.
2-3 down there.
Who needs digital ATIS when you've got a telescope?
yeah, exactly. So I thought that was
a great question.
But yeah, in answer to Jemima, it's rare to have binoculars, and it's I would say 99.9% of people don't. There's no issued binoculars. There's no binoculars on the flight deck. And I think a few reasons for it, but one of them would be simply that we don't look out the windows reliably. We work on the basis that we can spend a lot of our day seeing nothing out the windows at all except fog and cloud. So there's no sort of, or there's very limited uses for something that you need to see a long way away. Because most of our sim checks are done in pure IMC, which is instrument meteorological conditions, where you can't see out the windows at all, just sitting there in grey, which we get used to. So yeah, there we go. But I do like the idea.
Good question though.
And also, I think, and it's a frustrating thing of the windows on modern airliners, but of course, most of the windows are naturally pointed at an angle ever so slightly up. So I would suspect that if you ever try to take a photo in the cruise or something out one of the windows of the ground, it gets distorted really heavily because they're thick windows.
That's correct.
and then they reflect off the instruments inside, and at night and so on, it's a real problem. But yeah, so there we go. So that's an answer to that one. Cool. All right, moving on to the next one. Okay, the next question from Hayden J. Robbins. Hayden, I don't know, you probably don't know Hayden, Barney, but Hayden's been a long-term viewer of the channel. And Hayden is the one who's been most persistently asking me to fly helicopters at some point on the stream. So, because we were talking about the Airbus, the high performance.
Oh, the H145, yeah.
Yeah, with the emergency scenarios, which you gave me a quick spin on your sim, and it was great. So I will
Have you tried it yet?
No, I still haven't downloaded it. I am really bad at getting that done, but I will get that because that was great. So, Hayden, if I ever fly that, then it will be Barney who first enlightened me to which one to go for anyway. But Hayden has been dead keen on getting some helicopters on the channel. Anyway, Hayden asks, what barriers are there to entry as a pilot? For example, how old is too old? What subjects would you need to study? Things like that.
Barriers to entry. Do you know what? It's one of those industries that you people sort of join at many different ages, because there's no sort of black and white way of doing it. I think if you obviously you can only get a CPL at 18, you can get a PPL at 17, CPL which is commercial license, you can get 18, and then you can get an unfrozen ATPL at 21. Is that correct? I think.
Goodness me, I don't actually remember that one.
I have a feeling I think it's 21.
Yeah, and that's, so, just to be clear, that's all in the UK. So both me and Barney are UK licensed. So that's why those are the numbers that we've worked for. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
So I would say, age-wise, in terms of the younger end, I think 18 is the earliest you can get in the right-hand seat of a commercial jet or commercial aircraft, I should say. I think the other end of the spectrum, you can't fly commercially past 65.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like, I'd say to someone who's later on in life, say, oh yeah, you can go do your commercial license and join an airline, because you're probably not going to get it's hard work and you're starting from the bottom. Whereas if someone wanted to get a commercial license in their later years and go do instructing or go fly some lighter commercial aircraft around, I think that's the benefit. There's so many options in this career. What would you sort of say?
Yeah, that's it. I'd agree with that. Because I have met people in their 40s who are starting commercial training, i.e. getting their commercial license. Again, this is in the UK. But yeah, 65 is the cutoff. You can't fly commercially over 65 years old in the UK. And that's probably true in a lot of countries. There'll be some with lower age limits than that. The other problem is your medical... you need a class one medical, right? Which is the hardest one to get, or one of the harder ones to get. And as you get older, your chances of maintaining that go down. It gets harder to keep. Hopefully nothing happens, but things do happen. And you have to consider your risk of your career and what career you're giving up to go into aviation versus the chance of your medical staying in one piece. Because if you've worked for many years in an airline, you might have more protection. Whereas if you join an airline and then lose your medical straight away, you may not. There's all these things to consider. But in terms of actual physical barriers, there's nothing to stop you at 60 years old getting your commercial license and then getting a job as an airline. The question is that a wise move for yourself? And I would hope airlines don't recruit, or they shouldn't discriminate based on age. But your job market may be limited. For example, airlines, like you were saying there about commercial flying, a lighter aircraft, but then can you be a single pilot? Is there a different age limit for single pilot commercial operations? Can you still do that above 60, for example?
Yeah, I'm not sure, actually. That's a good question.
And again, these rules, even if we give you the rules of the UK, they'll be different all over the world. So if you're in your 40s or even in your 50s, if you trained at 50 years old you finished at 52, well, you've got potentially 13 years of flying, which is, that's a career, there's nothing wrong with that. And by that time you could get yourself into a well-paid job, all being well, but there's no guarantees of any of that. And airline industry is very, very cyclical, isn't it? So absolutely, it depends how much you're giving up. But I like your point, which is that, there's other avenues you could take into aviation if you're at that slightly older age.
Exactly. There's so many options out there with this job.
Yeah, and of course you can do private flying after 65, as long as you can keep that medical. You have to have a lot of medicals. They'll do it more often, check you up more often. But yeah,
which is a good thing at that sort of age, I think.
Yeah, sure. I imagine it would help people catch some things earlier, which could be very good.
Yeah.
And the other part, what subjects should you study? Things like that. So do you think there's any barriers in terms of your academic sort of focus as you grow up? Let's say you didn't focus on science or maths, and you were more into creative subjects, well, or sport or whatever else, and then you decide you want to go into flying. Is that an option?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually have I don't want to be that person that's advocated this, but I don't have any. I've only got GCSEs, and I went straight into flight training quite young, which I don't regret at all. But it's also
you didn't do A-levels.
No, I didn't know.
There you go.
So yeah. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, and I loved it. I had such a passion for it, and I think that shone through because my theory stuff is. I'm very poor when it comes to theory and mathematics, but in terms of actual, like, my passion, anything to do with flying, if you stamp aviation on the front of it, I suddenly become obsessed with it and will learn it. Whereas when I was at school, I was pretty useless when it came to maths and science. I obviously passed and got through it, but it wasn't, my whole life was revolved around flying. So I wouldn't say, obviously, I'd highly recommend getting A-levels and working hard at school, because that's, in this day and age, I think that's what they want. Yeah. And there's a lot of competition out there. And I think if you can have those better grades, I think that shines you above the rest. But by no means is maths and science getting A stars and that the be all and end all at all. I think passion and drive to want to do it is just as important.
That is great advice. I really, spot on. That's you've said better than what I would have said. totally agree with that. I think if you can get them, then great. And you know, I wouldn't recommend not doing just like you, but it's not the be all or end all. And no. GCSEs, for those of you who aren't in the UK, GCSEs are the exams you do at the age 16 in the UK. So then it would be at age 18, you would do your A levels. And then if you go and do a degree, that's later. But yeah, I was never a natural at maths either. I don't find I use any sort of the later maths I did at, even in secondary school, don't use it day to day. We tend to use 3x tables. There is a little bit involved when you're doing general navigation and planning, but it's really not a lot. And it's much more about motivation. And the academic side of flying is all about how interested are you in it, because you're going to have to just keep reading it, keep absorbing it, keep learning from it all the time. And if you don't like airplanes enough, or you don't like flying enough, then that won't be that interesting. And that's not to say you have to like everything. So there's several topics. Principles of flight is a really hard topic. It's the more maths orientated one, I would say. And I was not a huge fan of principles of flight, which is actually, you know, the fundamentals of how airplanes fly, which is, you'd think, is good. There were some really interesting bits to it, which I love, which was the operational use side, like how do slats affect the lift curve? How do flaps affect the lift curve? And why is it different? And this sort of stuff, great. But there's some other stuff to it that didn't always float my boat, as it were. Whereas aircraft systems, for me, I loved it. I could listen all day about how the TriStar has a different sort of hydraulic system to the 747-200. But then I know other people going through training who are the opposite, and they love principles of flight and the beauty of that, and they really weren't quite as interested in tire pressures and aquaplaning. But it doesn't matter. But you do have to sort of eventually soak up little bits of all of this as you go through the journey. But yeah, if you know, in terms of do you have to have studied anything like that? Not typically. Again, this will vary. Cadet schemes for airlines will be more selective. So if you want to go into an airline scheme, they might ask that you do have A-levels, for example. It does depend, though, and it depends on the market at the time, like all these
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Exactly.
Great. Moving on. Okay, so I am now in the same room as Barney, and we've upgraded into a sort of studio setup. So this is good. How does this feel, Barney?
Do you know, it feels really nice.
Good. Hopefully the audio sounds good for you guys at home. So we're going to move on to another question. This one is from Blip Pip, and it's a question I get asked all the time on stream, and I never really have a good answer for it, but I want to see what Barney thinks. What aircraft would you choose to fly, past or present, obviously excluding the A320?
If I could fly anything?
Yeah.
as a career or just for fun?
It wasn't that specific. So let's say one you want to fly commercially and one that you want to fly for fun or in your own time.
That's a really good question. So I think obviously everyone's going to say the jumbo. I would love to have flown the jumbo.
Classic? 200 or 400?
400. I think the 400 because that's one that I know the best and I love it.
Okay.
But you know what? I'd really like to have flown the 757.
Yeah.
Because it's like a pocket rocket.
Yeah.
Everyone who's flown it says it's like it rockets up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, see, that's a similar answer to me. 757's been a long-term favourite and it's one that I've used on the channel over and over again.
Yeah.
And I really like it. I like the flight deck and I like the shape of it. But it's mainly nostalgia from when I went on holiday as a kid.
Oh, fair enough.
I think that's why I like it so much. Really? 400, 747-400 as well.
Yeah.
More than the classic. So those sort of commercial ones. Are there anything outside of that?
Outside of that? Wow. Do you know what? I'd really like to fly a PC-12. Have a go on a PC-12.
Okay. So those of you who listen to podcast episode one will remember Barney's favourite aeroplane is the Diamond 42. 40.
Diamond 42 to fly.
42 to fly. Okay, yeah. Yeah.
It's fun.
So I should have known an answer like a PC-12 would come out. So again, Concorde, Vulcan, Spitfire are all sort of left in the shadows.
This is a really... You're going to hate me for saying this, but... Oh, do you know, I love the Concorde and it's cool, but I've never looked at it and gone, I really want to fly that. Really? I would like to fly it, to say I've flown it, but I don't have a burning passion to take it for a spin.
Okay.
But maybe I'm a bit boring in that respect. So, Spitfire, yeah, that would be cool, but I don't know.
I don't think I want to fly a Spitfire because it looks really hard. And the people I've spoken to who have flown it have said it's challenging, you know. And if you fly it in DCS, have you flown it in DCS?
No, I haven't.
It's got huge gyro and pitch power.
Oh yeah, prop wash and
the
yaw
and everything as you change power settings. So it's challenging, and it's got the gear close together. So there's a lot to think about. But I think in the air it must be absolutely lovely.
Yeah. Do you know what the Wildcat is?
Yeah, F4.
Yeah, the massive one, the one that used to land on aircraft carriers.
Is it F4F?
Yeah, I can't remember. I'm not that good at it, but it is a fantastic.
Now I said that, I have to look it
I'd
up.
Love to fly one of those. I went round the Fleet Air Arm Museum in Yeovil, which is well worth a visit.
F4F, yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that was there, and I was like, oh man, I'd just love to fly that.
Okay.
Mainly because it's big and chunky. Like, it's a big plane.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's got a massive radial engine on the front of it. Love it.
My
favorite. Love to give that a go.
Nice, yeah, I can see that. That's a nice one. I've got a favourite one of that generation, which would be the Sky Raider.
Oh, yes.
That is an absolute monster of a piston engine aeroplane.
Is that the one with the double prop?
I don't think it has a double prop. No, but
there is one that has like counter-rotating props on the front.
No, it's not this one that I'm aware of. But this one, I'll show you a picture there.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful, yeah.
The Douglas A1 Sky Raider. And that, so big, to get in, they don't climb up the side. There's a door at the back. And you walk through it like an actual aeroplane or like a commercial aeroplane.
That's
awesome. Through to the flight deck. It's a beast, yeah. It's one of the last sort of piston engine aeroplanes out there.
That's very cool.
So I would say, in my answer to that question, so you're going with sort of 747-400, 757, and the Wildcat, the aircraft.
Yeah, just random. If I could give it a go, I'd love to fly it.
Yeah, those are good choices. I would go for Concorde, actually. And I wouldn't have said that except for the fact that I've flown it on stream a few times.
Really?
And it's really cool.
Like, is it?
It's
challenging.
As you bring it in, sort of you're leaving the hold and you're bringing it in onto approach, like there's this sense of excitement about it and purpose and everything's going to be done just right. There's no getting slow or getting fast because you get slow, you lose all your energy and you're done and you get fast and you're doing Mach 1. Like it's crazy.
Wow.
It's such a machine and it takes so much care. So I really like it and I would love to try landing the real one.
That would have been cool. Yeah, that'd be cool. Do you know there's a sim at Brooklands?
Yes.
Go fly.
I want to try that out and give that a go because I feel like, we use the collimator in X-Plane.
Nice.
Have you flown the FS Labs one in P3D?
No, is it out? Oh no, they're doing one for
the old one. The old FSX.
No, I never flew it.
Are they doing a new one?
I think they are, yeah.
Yeah, so that would be good. So yeah, Concorde, and then I would say 757, A340 600 also.
Oh yeah, I'd love to take that for a circuit.
Yeah,
so I think it's just awesome.
Yeah, I remember seeing those lands, and they do look ungainly, but they're cool. That would be one to definitely do. But I'm sure over time we'll think of that. So I might steal that question. So thank you, Blip Pip, and I'll use that question more in future. maybe we'll come back to it because we will think of other aircraft. SR-72 is a classic a lot of people like, and I would certainly like to have seen one of those fly.
Yeah.
And then if you go into fighter jet world, then there's loads.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing I was going to say. There's just so much variety out there. You can choose anything. I think a pilot's dream is just to have a hangar of one of everything.
You want to mix it all up. Yeah, that's it.
I suppose that's the joy of flight sim, isn't it? You can try all different things. Yeah.
And that's why we do it on the channel with as many as we can. Definitely. Because like a recent sort of one since I've started the channel would be the 737-200. And it's very good.
Is there one? There's not one on Microsoft Flight Simulator. No, that's a shame.
No, not yet. Unless we see one from PMDG. But they don't seem. They focus more on the modern ones. Yeah. The NG.
I would love some more classic airliners on Flight Sim.
Well, we've got. There's the MD-80.
Yeah, that's great.
And then there's the A310.
Yeah.
Which is the A310 is very good.
The 75 supposedly Bluebird's doing. Bluebird's,
yeah.
I don't know. Would you class that as classic? I'm not sure.
The original version, maybe.
Yeah.
No speed tape and no altitude tape, just a sort of literally an artificial horizon that happened to be on a screen. But it was not like, it wasn't like the 747-400, which is a proper glass cockpit.
Yeah.
It was still dials and so on.
There's not much change between that and the now the 777 and stuff.
No, exactly.
It's quite amazing.
The brown flight deck and everything.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that question. But so for now, answers are 757, 747-400, Concorde, A340-600, and PC-12.
And all the rest.
Cool. Okay, this next question comes from Johnny Carlson again. And Johnny's posed a really good question, one that comes up all the time on streams, and one that me and Barney have tried to record this several times over, and it's such a big, hot topic. The question is, how do you see the future of one pilot or no pilot cockpits? Are they a possibility? And if not, why? So the question for you, Barney, is would you be happy going and flying single pilot, let's take this to mean passenger commercial operations, so flying around an Airbus A320 and equivalent and bigger aircraft.
A to B.
Passenger.
Simple terms, you could do it. Okay. We do it on flight sim, don't we?
Yeah.
You sit there on flight sim and you fly around A to B. In the real world, there's so many variables and they change all the time.
Yeah.
It takes one minor system to go wrong or something to happen.
Yeah.
And your capacity, we talk about the capacity bucket in commercial aviation, which if you imagine a bucket filled with water, that water is your stress level. So as more things fill it up, the water level's rising, which is increasing. And at some point, you're not going to be able to take on anymore.
Yeah.
So I think in commercial aviation, flying a normal aircraft completely no issues with it, A to B, good weather, as long as you were right in your game, you knew everything, you were on it,
you slept really, simply really well,
you had a good breakfast,
yeah,
you're ready to go, nothing could go wrong, it was perfect.
You can't eat once you're going,
absolutely. Everything was perfect, and we are talking absolutely perfect, with a very, very massive pinch of salt, But I think the problem is there's too many variables.
Yeah.
It's a complex environment, aviation, even at the best of times. It doesn't take a lot to turn a molehill into a mountain.
Yeah.
So in answer to your question, could we do it?
Yeah.
Yes, because we're trained to.
Yeah.
Pilot incapacitation, for example. Do I think it's going to happen soon? No, not at all. I think there's too much risk, too many variables, and a lot of other questions that we could dive into now.
That's a great answer, and that has taken us 5 or 6 attempts to get to. I like that summary.
Cool.
So I'm going to now ruin it by mangling it with my thoughts on top of that.
Yeah, let's.
I totally agree. And just like you say, we manage, and it's interesting. It's a really good thing about the flight sim you brought up, because on the streams, it's all single pilot, right? And it's slightly hindered by the ergonomics of trying to click around a complex flight deck. But that also is an advantage, because, of course, we can't actually reach all the switches particularly easily. On the flight deck, we can reach them if we need to, but it's designed for two people.
Yeah.
But I often on stream, if I introduce any dynamic situation like VATSIM, live weather, and suddenly it, I'm often making the excuse on stream whether there would be another pilot to do this. So, and that is when the airplane's working fine usually. So it's like landing into. I did a stream into New Zealand and we landed with a tailwind because I had taken that from the briefing pack but hadn't rechecked it in the
interesting.
Now, admittedly, the routine is there in real aviation, but another pilot would have spotted that.
Yeah.
And this is normal operations, right? And if you then go into abnormal, the checklists get much more complex. The decision making is huge. And my
you
final
don't take into account real people as well.
Well, yeah,
which is the people. Yeah,
exactly. And then my final point would be that all the training, you know, all of your training in The Sims recently and mine as well, it's very rarely technical to do with the aircraft. There is a bit of handling, but it's mainly management of the other pilots, the way you communicate with each other and build up your situational awareness, and how you then manage the situation from there on. And this is all interpersonal skills. It's between the two pilots and between the cabin crew and the ground crew and ops and getting all the weathers. And this is all stuff that's managed between the two of you. And one person doing that, it's not possible now.
It's a huge task, yeah.
It's not possible now, like in an emergency situation. You could get away with it, but it wouldn't be a safe way to operate day to day as it is now.
No.
So moving on then, as we look at more modern aircraft, and we've already talked about this, the 350 and some other aircraft are able to handle some of those complex emergencies.
Yeah, and the autopilot works and like dual engine failures and stuff like that. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Incredible, yeah.
So that is starting, as you talked about that capacity bucket, it's starting to get to the level where that computer can now take some of that capacity away from us, it can give us more capacity, even in an emergency situation. An emergency descent is a hugely
complex task,
yeah. And it's got to be done quickly and correctly. So the way the emergency descent, for those of you who don't know, is when an aircraft depressurizes. We call it an emergency descent because it's an immediate descent down to get into the thicker air where everyone can breathe without the need of the extra oxygen masks that come down. Now, the A320 can't do that on its own. We do it ourselves. And the checklist is written in a way that one pilot does it and the other pilot doesn't really do anything except
monitor.
Check that the other pilot's done it right.
Yeah.
Because it's that critical. Now, the more modern aircraft can actually descend on its own if it thinks the pilots haven't done it right. So you could say, well, that's now replaced the second pilot in that situation.
The thing is, there's a really good point. With the emergency descent function, is the initial actions are the critical bit.
Yeah.
Once you're going down is when the management starts.
Exactly.
And the human management starts. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we could go down a rabbit hole with that. But, I think it's a really good point.
If you're over the Atlantic in the middle of the night, it's great that the airplane's descended you to 10,000 feet and everyone is in the thicker air. Perfect. Well, now where does it divert to? And how does it decide how to do that? Does it go forwards, backwards? Does it go up to Iceland? Is the runway covered in snow? And how is it going to gather all this data?
Yeah.
There's so much more information that goes into any of these abnormal situations over a pre-planned alternate airport en route. That's not enough. We don't, in these emergency situations, just go with whatever was written down before we left.
Yeah.
So how can these aircraft decide to do this on their own?
It's a very dynamic environment.
Yeah. And they would need to be able to decide this on their own, even if it's single pilot.
Yeah.
Because, like as we said, if you need one pilot, then that pilot's incapacitated. But the airplane now has to be able to take decisions on its own.
Yeah.
And they just...
You're going down a massive, like, ethical route, aren't you, there, with, like, how it judges it.
How can it do that? And we're so far from seeing that.
Yeah. I think especially in commercial aviation, I think we're a long way off. Yeah. I think it's an interesting subject. And as we've taken so long to record this question, I think...
I think this is
I feel confident with what we said.
How I feel
there,
about
it.
The final thing is to soften it slightly from what we're talking about is the idea that, well, could you have a two-pilot flight deck with one pilot flying and one pilot resting, and then you would only need two pilots to fly these longer routes, because often there's three pilots, one is asleep and two are on the flight deck for long-haul flights. For those of you listening who aren't aware of that, that's quite a common way to allow crews to fly longer distances.
I think the only argument with that is that the most critical stage of the flight, takeoff and landing, approaches, descents, and when you're flying all over the world, you wouldn't think it, but the different ways of operating, whether you're going to the Caribbean or the US or the Middle East or Asia, is so different to what you're used to within say UK or Europe, that you need to be on your game.
Yeah.
You need to be feeling fit. You need to be right up there, your capacity. You need to be ready to fly.
Yeah.
You need to be as if you're just reporting for the duty. So I think having three pilots, it gives each pilot time to sort of have that rest where they can reset, take a break, and then go back into the flight deck and they're ready to go. I think going down to two, I think a pilot as a human being sat on the flight deck is never going to fully switch off, even if they're like trying to get to sleep, for instance.
No.
I think if you have a single pilot on their own, that's a hell of a lot of responsibility going onto that one person's shoulders.
And the chances are they'll be exhausted or they'll be tired because it'll be overnight or whatever, which is why someone's asleep. It's not like they're having a normal day. They're having a long extended duty. So then how do they keep themselves alert when they're entirely on their own? Now, that may well be possible. An aircraft, like cars, might soon be able to check that the pilots are awake.
Yeah.
Already
they do. On the 777, they have crew alertness monitoring.
There you go. And you have to move a switch, don't you?
Yeah, you've got to press something within 15 minutes.
So they have these systems. I could see it, but I'm like you. I agree that it would be fine to have one pilot on the flight deck and one pilot not on the flight deck asleep. you know, lying down somewhere, getting proper rest. But up until there's a problem or there's thunderstorms nearby, how often have you been on a flight and you think you're going to have an easy cruise and you're going to just sit and have your lunch or whatever, and then actually you spend the entire flight working really hard, managing the weather, the situation, the diversion, the seatbelts, the cruising level, the fuel burn that you might go into diverting around thunderstorms. And this stuff can take hours out of your day. So will there be an opportunity? So if there's only two pilots on the flight deck, they're both engaged monitoring that stuff, they get past whatever they were doing and now they do have time to go off and rest, but maybe they don't have enough time to rest and now they can't get to their destination because they're out of hours because they can't rest.
It's a really interesting subject, that.
So it's hugely complex, and that's why the legislation, they're talking about rules for single pilot for sort of 2027 time and then fully automated flight decks 2030 onwards, and I would be surprised if we see much movement in that area for the next decade or more, or 20 years. I'm not expecting to see anything soon unless there's some major advances somewhere.
The thing as well is, you look at the 320neos, they're brand new and they're not fitted with any automated.
They can't take
like
off
that.
On their own.
They can't do anything really. They're the same Airbus as they were 25, 30 years ago.
And to prove the principle about taking off, you're saying, well, an airplane can land on its own, so why can't it take off on its own? Well, one of the key reasons is taking off is fine on a normal day, and the airplane could, of course, do it quite simply. But if an engine fails during takeoff, that's an incredibly challenging thing to do, which is why the pilots do the takeoff
every 6 months.
And we practice it all the time. So it's just one of those other things that doesn't work when it goes wrong, even if it could be done. It looks straightforward on a normal day. But, you know, it's no good having an autopilot that on takeoff the engine fails and it just drops out and the pilot has to suddenly take over and save it. That's why we fly manual takeoffs and practice in case that happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there we go. Right, we'll stop on that one for now. But yeah, it's a good question, Johnny, and I'm sure we'll have more thoughts on it in the future as more articles are written about it. I'm sure we will continue to hear about it every few months. There'll be more articles. It's always been discussed. Before I became a pilot, I was being asked, oh, why are you bothering? There'll be single pilot. And, you know, here we are. Over 10 years later, no progress in that direction whatsoever.
Look how old some of the commercial airliners are that are still flying.
And that's the other thing.
There's brand new ones arriving. They're not going to be changing them in the next 25 years.
Exactly. The aircraft arriving and delivered today can't do this stuff.
Yeah.
So what are the chances of that? And they'll be here for the next 20 plus years. So there we go. Right, we'll move on. Okay, next question from Davina Pancake, which is a great name. But thank you for this question. And it is, a few hundred feet after takeoff, there is a bing noise, but there's no FMA change. What is it? For those of you listening who don't know, FMA stands for flight mode annunciator. It's the on top of the primary flight display, and it just tells us what the autopilot and flight guidance system is doing. So normally we have noises if that changes because it's alerting us. Well, it does. We get noises if it changes when we didn't ask it to, so that we are aware of the change. So why are we getting this noise? Why are there no changes in the automatic? What's that noise telling us? What do you think, Barney?
So that bing, 200 feet over the take, that is the emergency exit lights going off.
Yeah.
Don't know why, but that's what they do. So when we select the gear up in the flight deck, you'll hear the bing, and that's the lights above your head pointing at the exits going off.
That's it. Yeah. It's neither of us know why, but it is notable in the Airbus. I don't think 737s do it. I haven't noticed if they do.
I don't know. I presume it's to do with the fact that you're going to mainly need the emergency exits.
Yeah.
When you're on the ground or during takeoff and landing is probably the critical phases. So I suppose it's just arm them ready to do it and then think, so I don't need them anymore, turn them off.
Turn them off.
We get up, yeah.
But why it makes the noise as well, it does a little chime, a little bing. But yeah, we don't know why it makes that noise, but I'm sure someone at Airbus could tell you. But yeah, that's all it is. So the gear comes up and those lights, the emergency exit lights go out. And if you're flying around as a passenger at night, you might notice the lights come on and off as the wheels go up and down. And that's all it is. So thank you for the question, Davina.
Good question.
Hopefully that helps. good. Moving on then. flight simulator stuff. We'll talk about some flight simulator news. So recently updated and expanded is the Leonardo Fly the Mad Dog MD-80. And now there is an 88, 83 and 88 variant. So do you have the Leonardo MD-80?
I don't. I did on P3D.
Okay.
And I loved it on P3D. I haven't got it in Microsoft Flight Simulator yet.
Okay.
But I will.
You will. Yeah, will I'm sure you will.
That. Yeah, I'm sure.
If you listen to previous podcasts, Barney usually buys them whilst we're doing the podcast and then starts flying them. But today, because we're in the same room, he's not able to do that.
I can't do that. But you're right. I do. Amazing aircraft.
It's
amazing,
cool, isn't
sense
it?
Of detail.
I love it when, and it's such a different aeroplane. So I love it when people make those aircraft, and who, the Leonardo team clearly love that aeroplane.
Yeah.
I think it looks great in Microsoft Flight Simulator. I know some people were a bit upset saying it's just a sort of ported P3D version, but I still think it looks fantastic in the sim.
That's good.
And the lighting and everything really, really comes together. It's really hard to learn. It's so different. I found it hard to learn because it's so different to what I'm used to. So every switch was in a different place. The auto throttle system is not really... Does it even have auto throttle? I'm trying to remember now. It took me ages and I haven't flown it on stream since. I've done one stream with it. What I managed.
It's very complex. The overhead panel's a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
I think it's not very ergonomic.
No.
But it's still an amazing plane to fly. And massive cool. flaps on it.
Yes.
Just awesome.
Well, now you can get the... So that's been updated, but now you can get the 83 and 88 variants. So the 83 has a bit more power and it's a bit heavier. Quite a common sort of variant change that as they initial aircraft, especially if they're technically limited by the engines. You see it. You've seen it with like... with lots of different aircraft, especially fighter jets, but you do get commercial aircraft launch and then they sort of go, meh, we could have probably got more out of this design. Let's put new engines on it, make it heavier. Now it can carry more cargo, more fuel. We can go further because it's got more power behind it. And then you've also got the, and that's probably a sign as well that they've made it more powerful. That's probably a sign of it being from a time when fuel concerns weren't as great.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because of course... now we expect an updated version, like the Neos, to just burn less fuel. No one cares if it can go faster, but they want it to burn less.
Oh, that's good. A really good point, yeah.
And then the 88 was launched with Delta Airlines, and I know you will know this question, but this is obviously quite an old aircraft. It comes from an era before, but that was operated up until 2020.
Wow.
Which is hard to believe. Yeah, the 88, which is, I think they've updated the flight deck for that as well, slightly changed.
Have they? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so quite a few variants now of that MD-80, but I'm going to need to relearn the original one to start off with and then get it back on stream.
Look forward to that.
Have you seen when I do, if I'm trying to learn a new aeroplane, I'll do a stream on Twitch where I sit there and I tell people before the stream, this is going to be potentially very boring. And there's like silence as I sit there trying to read through the
really? Oh,
the quick start guide on one screen and try and find the button. And then there's people in the chat usually help me out a lot. And that's how I get a lot of learning
that's
done.
That's good. So,
with Concorde.
I remember when I first tried flight, it took me like an hour to try and start the engines.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good going.
Yeah, yeah. I was sat for ages watching YouTube videos.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Good.
Do you know a model that I'd really like to come to Microsoft Flight Simulator?
Oh, yeah.
The Majestic Dash 8.
Yeah, lovely.
Oh, I just love a Dash 8 in the flight sim.
Is it on the way? Are they doing it?
I don't think they are. I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. But they're sort of absolutely amazing model. Like, really cool. If you've got P3D on it, it's fantastic.
I did have the Majestic in FSX, and I've obviously got the FlyJ Sim Q4XP, which is for X-Plane.
The FSX one was the Q300, wasn't it?
No.
It wasn't the 400. Was it 400?
Yeah, 400 for sure.
All right, I can remember, yeah.
Yeah, so I have used that, and it was excellent. Majestic Software confirms Q400 for Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Oh, wow.
It is being ported over. That was from FS Elite, have an article from the 23rd of November, 2022.
I wonder when that will come. That would be absolutely incredible.
So it's on the way. That will be great because I love that plane. I used to fly that plane.
Yeah.
And I really like seeing it in the Sims. And the FlyJ Sim one is super. It's really good.
Oh, that's on X-Plane.
That's X-Plane 12. Yeah. They've updated it for 12. It's very good.
It.
But yeah, the Dash 8 Q400 is, and that's another of those really different aircraft.
It's got a very strange FMS. Took me a while to figure out how to program it.
Yeah, because it's like completely generic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been
Honeywell,
stuck
isn't it?
In it.
It's
universal.
Universal. Oh, yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyway, I look forward to seeing that.
It's an exciting time for Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Oh, here you go. They're also going to do a Q300 version 2, which will be done from scratch for Microsoft Flight Simulator after the Q400 has been ported over. So looking good. Yeah, more aircraft coming.
Amazing.
That would be great. And then another turboprop, the competitor to the Dash 8, coming from Asobo in their expert series, the ATR.
Yeah, that's cool.
You're excited about that?
I am actually excited. I love those sort of things. Anything that's a bit different.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
And it's a cool aircraft, the ATR.
The ATR is. I don't know much about it. I know that pilots who flew both, people like flying the ATR hand flying. I think it flies quite nicely. The Q400 flies fine. It's very powerful, but it's not particularly a... No one would call it a pilot's dream. There's quirks to it.
Right.
Like the two landing flap settings. One is, in my opinion, not enough landing flap. I would prefer to have a bit more. And then the other setting is obviously too much. Things like that that make it quite challenging. It's got a very restrictive pitch limit. So you can only land at 5 degrees pitch on the wow. Q400 before you get a tail strike, or you're close to a tail strike. So it's not worth the risk. Things like that. The ATR, I think, doesn't have some of those, but I'm sure it has other limitations.
On the Dash 8, you sort of land with a bit of power on, don't you? You don't yep. sort of cut the thrust like you do on, it's like on the King Air and stuff.
Yeah, that's it. The lift comes from those propellers over the wings. So if you chop the power, you get an instant response for a start, unlike a jet engine that sort of spools down. The turboprops are very responsive. So you'll immediately lose power and then lose lift, and it'll just dump itself onto the runway.
Interesting.
So you never land at idle on the Q400, either flap setting. One of them you would reduce power as you try to raise the nose, and the other one you might even have to squeeze on some power if you feel some sink. It seems to get almost no ground effect, partly from the, I think it's from the wings being high up.
It's got very thin wings.
And
well,
the high aspect
it?
Ratio. Yeah. yeah. So yeah. it doesn't seem to get really strong ground effects like yeah. some jet aircraft can.
Interesting. But yeah, the ATR is going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
I watched a bit of the stream and it just looks great. They've really thought about it.
Good. Yeah, that is good, because another project was cancelled. Did you
yeah,
see that?
Yeah, Milviz, yeah, it's a shame, because they were good as well.
Yeah, but they said, well, they're not going to do it if this one's coming.
They did a fantastic King Air 350.
Oh, really? Yeah, Milviz has done some good stuff
on
over
P3D,
the years.
Which yeah. I'd love them to port over.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. But...
King Air, yeah.
Yeah.
But the King Air's in the sim, isn't it?
It is, but this was a high much study level, I would say, King Air yeah. 350. But then the Black Square, well, they've just released the Bonanza and Baron.
Yeah.
They are. I've got all of them. They are absolutely incredible. Cannot fault it.
So those of you who don't know, the Black Square are sort of upgraded steam gauge overhauls, they call them. So they provide more systems and depth and detail to the default models. So you get the same sort of visual model, but internally you get the proper steam gauges as yeah. opposed to the G1000s. Which is strange, because Barney is a huge fan of these Garmin
yeah,
systems.
I do like a Garmin.
I'm not very familiar with them, but Barney likes them a lot. But even so, you're enjoying the
yeah,
Black Square
absolutely
one.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah, good fun.
I've tried out the Caravan one, and I did really like it. It definitely encouraged me to
fly that.
Have
you not got
the aircraft.
Others yet?
I haven't got them yet. Bonanza is definitely tempting.
Yeah,
I like the
got
Bonanza.
To do the Bonanza, yeah.
As a quick aeroplane. Yeah, that's cool.
And they've got the other variants as well, turbocharged.
Oh, really?
Non-turbocharged.
Right, there you go. Yeah, so ATR excited about. And then, you know, the ATR, something I want them to model. I don't know if they will. They didn't show much of the visual model in that stream, I'm guessing.
No, it was mainly cockpit from what I saw.
The systems, yeah, which looked detailed, very detailed. But yeah, in the real ATR, lots of paperwork goes in and out the flight deck during a turnaround on the ground, load sheets and NOTOX, which are telling us about what sort of cargo is on board and so on. But there's, on the ATR, a little flap to pass these notes straight out of the flight deck because the windows don't open. So instead, there's a little hole on the captain's side beneath the window, and it's actually in the aircraft skin, and then they pass the paperwork out through that.
Oh, wow.
And it's because some of the ATRs have the cargo hold behind the pilots, so it's a bulkhead, so they seal that up, and they can't get the only door on and off the aircraft cabin is actually at the very back. So... it's really inconvenient to have the dispatcher having to walk all the way through the aircraft every time.
Yeah.
Or they can't whilst, let's say the aircraft's boarding and they want to give some paper to the captain, like fuel receipts and stuff. It would be a nightmare trying to do it through that one door at the back and through the whole cabin so they can pass it through a little hatch.
That's cool. I have to look at that.
If you see an ATR, they do that, and it's quite interesting. So I'd love to see that modelled. Yeah. Something I haven't seen before. Another relatively big release, although Barney is not very X-Plane orientated, I think that's fair to say. TOLIS released the A320neo for X-Plane 12.
I did see that.
Did you see any of my stuff on it?
I haven't yet. Is it good? What's it like?
Well, it's definitely a step up on the other TOLIS. It's the best TOLIS Airbus.
Oh, wow.
The systems on all the TOLIS and the handling are super, really good. The only thing with the TOLIS Neos, and it was the same on their 321neo in X-Plane 11 and now 12, I don't think the rotate law is as good as the A32NX. Because it still has the dead zone.
Okay.
And the irony is, it's a really perfect simulation. The best, I think, of rotating an Airbus, a CEO, i.e. where that dead zone is. So for those of you who fly the Airbus in flight simulators, in the real aircraft, CEO, the older versions, as you rotate, i.e. on takeoff, and you're pitching the nose up, there's a slight pause or a dead band around 10 degrees pitch where you have to actually squeeze a little bit more on the elevator, which you're familiar with, Barney.
Yeah.
But on the Neos, you don't have to do that. They have what's called a rotate law. So you can just squeeze the side stick back and it will maintain a certain rotation rate and it will fix that for you. It's very good in the real aircraft. The TOLIS doesn't model that as well in the Neo versions, whereas the A321X does it perfectly.
Interesting.
The fly-by-wire. They've done a great job with it. But otherwise, the TOLIS is really nice model. And they've definitely upgraded the graphics and everything. And it even has animated de-icing now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's become a really fleshed out, high detailed simulation. And it still has its party trick, which is you can save a situation at any point, any moment, any altitude, speed, and it will save everything. Every switch position, it will save your entire FMGC, your FMS. It will save all of that. So you can save on final, land, and then just click load, and it will just put you straight back there with all the buttons in the right place.
Wow.
It's really powerful. I used to use it a lot for making videos, but if you want to practice your landings, there's nothing quicker or better than that. It's really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the TOLIS is very good, and it has all the failures modeled and so on.
I say it every time, I wish TOLIS would bring the 340 to Microsoft Flight Simulator.
I know.
It would sell like hotcakes.
I also want TOLIS to do the... I think their systems modeling is so good. They should just do the systems for the X-Plane 12 default A330.
Right.
The default A330 and X-Plane 12 sounds incredible, looks beautiful. It's one of the best default models I've ever seen. It just doesn't have the systems depth at all. TOLIS should just do that for them, I think. It'd be great if they could come up with some sort of collaboration. But anyway, that's, so the TOLIS A320neo, that has now come out. And yeah, it's very good for those of you in X-Plane. In X-Plane land, although I don't think Barney's going to be convinced over just yet.
I have got it.
You have
I'm
got
asking
it,
it a go. Yeah, I will give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, some of the big X-Plane big ticket items are now in Microsoft Flight Simulator, like the A310, but the A340 isn't, you see. So there you go. We've got another famous flyer from Microsoft Flight Simulator. So we had the DHC-4 Caribou, the Dabbling Canada Caribou. Now we have the Antonov 2.
Oh, the Antonov 225?
Two.
No, I haven't seen that.
You've not seen that? That's just...
Oh, do you know what I have? Yes, yep. The massive single engine thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I have seen that. I did read about that.
Biplane.
Yes.
Very cool, isn't it? So there it is. So that has now come out. I haven't tried it yet, though, so I will definitely be taking a look because it's quite something. Oh, there's different versions, but I want to give that a go. I'm sure there's plenty of YouTube videos. Yeah, famous flight Antonov 2. There's lots of videos on it already. But a nice big Antonov biplane. So that's something to look forward to. Try and get that on maybe a group flight or something.
That'd be awesome.
Probably very slow, though. I struggle with the slow aircraft on group flights because you can't cover much ground in a couple of hours. Yeah. And there was the Turtle Beach Velocity stick.
Yeah, I saw that. That looks awesome.
Why do you think that?
I just think it looked really sleek and like
smart.
Has some cool things on it.
Yeah.
And the fact it's got Hall effect sensors as well.
You like that?
Did like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great looking stick and it's also ambidextrous. You can put it left or right sided, which I quite like. I read a review that said it's very heavy. So I'm interested to try it out because their Velocity 1 yoke was quite light. And their throttle's quite light, but they seem to have gone for a much stronger stick this time around, but might need mounting to sort of get the best out of it.
Okay,
otherwise,
that's interesting.
It has a habit of lifting off, apparently, from the review. But yeah, something to try in the future.
Nice.
But it's nice to see more peripherals. I mean, we haven't had this many. For years, the only joystick recommended was the Logitech Extreme 3D.
Yeah.
That was it for a decade, I think. And that's what I had many years ago. And that still was one of the best out there. And now we've got so many options, and you can have Boeing and Airbus. It's
Microsoft really cool.
It's changed
the
landscape.
It's really cool, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. So that is good fun. Great. And now I'm just going to show Barney a video. I'll put a link into the description. And yeah, we do this. We've done this each week so far, and I'm going to just get your take on it. But I think you'll like this video. You must have seen it.
I don't know. Let's have a look.
Okay, so we're now watching the video. It is called Runway Blocked Low Level Orbit. Its landing weight, 73 tons, they can helpfully tell you at the start. It's a 727 in Mogadishu.
Yeah.
So they're on approach.
And wow. God, look at the smoke trails going on the back of that.
Yeah, 727. And the runway's blocked by a light aircraft in front. So this is their solution. Look at that. I mean, how high is this? Under 200 feet, maybe 200 feet?
Wow.
So they just, it's an approach over the sea, and they just go and do an orbit instead of a go-around.
No way.
Have you not seen this before?
No, I've never seen it.
It's not. It's only got 200 and something thousand views. It's not gone as viral as some.
Oh, my God.
Look at that bank angle. That's got to be 45
right over
plus.
Over the sea.
200 feet over the sea. I mean...
Oh, man. This is what gives pilots bad names.
Have you seen their, you've seen their GPS just sitting in the middle there? Now, it, you know, it sort of works because they're over the water, so they haven't got any obstacles, cranes and things like that. But they are low enough that if there was a crane, they would they'd be very close wow. to it. And then they just roll that back... What, on final.
Is this an airline or?
I don't know what they're. I think it's a cargo flight into Mogadishu. Yeah. I mean, as they say here, 90 seconds later, back on short final. Certainly not a
that is
stabilized approach by any means
incredible.
Compared to modern airliner criteria and not something we could ever do.
Do not do that. Wow.
It's, you know, we don't know anything about the situation as to why they didn't want to go around. There could have been a reason they can't, for example.
Maybe
or where they can't fly or whatever else, but and it's an amazing piece of flying because
yeah,
they
it's incredible
manage,
flying, but wow.
No, it doesn't meet any sort of airliner criteria.
No, I wouldn't recommend doing that.
No, and one of the things that occurred to me whilst watching it was a big thing we do is if we have to hold, we'll fly in a hold, an actual hold, which has straight edges to it, and the reason we do that is that if wind's blowing you across, then the straight edges you can use to correct, so you stay in the same piece of airspace.
Yeah,
it's not. We don't just fly in a continuous circle, because otherwise you can't calculate that for drift unless you're using a computer.
Yeah, that's like a very modern good aircraft. Point.
So that's why we have holds in the shape we have them, that sort of slight rectangle sort of
yeah.
shape.
Yeah,
but the if you fly in orbit, you have to constantly change the bank angle to stay in the circle, because if you just fly a circle at the same bank angle, you're just going to end up in a different place wherever the wind blew you. So this was done at 200 feet, and obviously they've taken into account the wind and maybe there wasn't much, but the impressive part to me is that they rolled out pointing at the
yeah,
runway
they
again.
They did, yeah.
Because they could have quite easily done that and rolled out...
Complete you know, wrong place, yeah.
Hundreds of metres left or right,
yeah.
And they do that in what is effectively a heavy aircraft, 72 tonnes. It's quite not as heavy as I thought for a 727. But anyway.
That's really interesting.
That video will be up on the description for the podcast, and I highly recommend taking a look at it. It's an amazing video, but certainly not something we would see in commercial aviation. Or
yeah,
something that
absolutely.
We would be doing or recommending, but that's not to discredit what they were up to. But yeah, it's quite an amazing piece of flying, and to do it so low, it's almost like you feel like they could have maybe gone up to sort of 500 feet, done it, and come back and still been quite quick.
Yeah,
but instead they do the entire thing at 200 feet.
Yeah, do not recommend trying that at home. At all.
It's quite something.
Wow.
There we go. Right. So that's as is tradition is the end of our podcast for today.
It is, yeah.
Did you enjoy it, Barney?
I have.
Excellent.
Some really good questions. It's nice
we're getting great questions out of the viewers, the listeners.
Becoming more natural as well. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah,
I'm feeling good. Yeah.
And hopefully we can do this in person more, and we'll get slightly better at getting the audio right for everyone. But we've got lots more ideas, lots more questions to answer. We've got guests. I'm going to start lining up now. I think we can start introducing some third parties onto the podcast. And like I say, if you want to ask us a question, go to join the 320 SimPilot Discord, and then you can ask it there. And soon it will be available in the YouTube as well. But yeah, great. Well, thanks very much for coming on again.
Loved it.
We'll see you next
time. Thank you. See you soon.
Cheers. Bye. So that's all for this episode of From Flight Level 320, an Airline Pilot Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Do please keep the feedback coming. You can either put it onto the 320 SimPilot Discord or email it to me at simpilot320@hotmail.com. If you do, I will read it. I may not get the time to answer to everyone, but I do read the feedback there as well. So thank you so much for the feedback we've had so far. It's really appreciated, and it means the world to us. There'll be plenty more guests to come, and we'll start to mix up the content on the podcast a little bit. So do please stay tuned, and of course, do share the podcast with anyone you think might be interested. That's it from all for us for now then. So we'll see you again in another podcast, video or live stream soon. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.